Goosebumps, Book 28, The Blob That Ate Everyone. I used to believe in monsters, Alex said. She pushed her glasses up on her nose. Her nose twitched. With her pink face and brown cheeks, she looked like a tall blonde bunny rabbit. When I was little, I thought that a monster lived in my sock drawer, Alex told me. You won't believe this, Zacky, but I never opened that drawer. I used to wear my sneakers without socks. Sometimes I tried to go barefoot to kindergarten. I was too scared to open that drawer. I knew the sock monster would bite my hand off. She laughed. Alex has the strangest laugh. It sounds more like a whistle than a laugh. She shook her head, and her blonde ponytail shook with her. Now that I'm 12, I'm a lot smarter, she said. Now I know that there is no such thing as monsters. That's what Alex said to me. 2 seconds before we were attacked by the monster.
Goosebumps, Book 4, The Haunter. I guess I could start my story by telling you about the school assembly on Monday morning. It will give you a good idea of what has been happening to me. I pushed into the third row of the auditorium and dropped down beside my best friend, Bill Buzner. Everyone calls him Buzzy. I had no idea that I was about to freak out and go totally wacko in front of the whole school. My name is Sammy Baker. I'm 12, and I never freak out or lose my cool or go berserk. I'm probably the quietest, nicest, most law-abiding, rule-following, do-good kid at Grover Cleveland Middle School. Ask anyone. Even Miss Flake, my teacher, says I am the least trouble of any of her students. She says that's her highest compliment. Miss Flake says she would give me a gold star for attitude and a gold star for behavior. Except she doesn't believe in giving gold stars. Miss Flake is very funny. She is always cracking jokes. She even makes fun of Mr. Harkness, the principal.
Hummingbird by Kimberly Green Angle. On the last Saturday of June, I heard the 7th whippoorwill's cry float up from the woods and into my bedroom window. I picked up the phone and called Megan Laverne, and we planned to meet in the clover field at midnight. Then I sat down beside the window and looked out the night, throbbing with the chirps and chants of crickets and frogs and katydids. I was turning 12 in August, and I guess I'd lived on a watermelon farm long enough for my blood to pump to the rhythm of all that sound. In fact, nights were so loud outside my bedroom window that every summer I forgot there was such a thing as silence. But that night, I heard another sound above and beyond all the racket. It was the faraway clatter and wail of a train passing by the point at Sunnybrook Acres and continuing on through downtown Jubilee. I stared out into the darkness of the fields, wondering where the train was coming from, where it was going. Suddenly, I sat up straighter. The sound of the horn had changed a little. Yes, there it was again. It was almost like a voice calling to me. Come! Come! The voice seemed to cry across the distance. I stuck my head farther out into the shadows, now pinpricked with stars, and asked, Where? Where? The Babysitter's Club, Book 1, Christie's Great Idea. The Babysitter's Club. I'm proud to say it was totally my idea, even though the four of us worked it out together. Us is Mary Ann Spire, Claudia Kishi, Stacy McGill, and me, Christy Thomas. I got the idea on the first Tuesday afternoon of 7th grade. It was a very hot day. It was so hot that in my unair-conditioned school, Stony Brook Middle School, the teachers had opened every single window and door and turned off all the lights. My hair stuck damply to the back of my neck, and I wished I had a rubber band so I could pull it into a long ponytail. Bees flew into the classroom and droned around our heads, and Mr. Redmont, our teacher, let us stop working to make fans out of construction paper. The fans didn't do much except keep the bees away, but it was nice to take up 10 minutes of social studies making them. Anyway, that stifling afternoon dragged on forever, and when the hands of the clock on the front wall of our classroom finally hit 2:42 and the bell rang, I leaped out of my seat and shouted, Hooray! I was just so glad that it was time to get out of there. I like school and everything, but sometimes enough is enough. Mr. Redmont looked shocked. He was probably thinking he'd been so nice letting us make fans. There I was, not appreciating it at all, just glad the day was over. I felt bad, but I couldn't help what I had done. I'm like that. I think of something to say, and I say it. I think of something to do, and I do it. Mom calls it impulsive. Sometimes she calls me trouble, But she doesn't just mean trouble. She means trouble. And I was in trouble then. I could sense it. I've been in enough trouble to know when it's coming. Mr. Redmont cleared his throat. He was trying to think of a way to punish me without humiliating me in front of the other kids. Things like that are important to him.
Christy,
Mr. Redmont began, and then he changed his mind and started over.
Class,
he said.
You have your homework assignments. You may go. Christy, I'd like to see you for a minute.
While the rest of the kids gathered up their books and papers and left the room, talking and giggling, I made my way up to Mr. Redmont's desk. Before he could say a word, I began apologizing to him. Sometimes that helps. Mr. Redmont, I said, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean anything. I mean, I didn't mean I was glad school was over. I meant I was glad I could go home, because my house is air-conditioned. Mr. Redmont nodded.
But do you think, Christy, that it would be possible in the future for you to conduct yourself with a bit more decorum?
I wasn't sure of the exact meaning of decorum, but I had a pretty good idea it meant not spoiling Mr. Redmont's day by jumping up and shouting hooray when the bell rang. Hi, this is Stephanie Valinda Quinn. Thank you for listening to my Boys and Girls audiobook demo. You can contact me at stephanievalindaquinn.com or stephanievalindaquinn@gmail.com.